say that here.
JWK4CHY.
You know, I can this Yaesu to Yaesu fast band repeat setup. It seems to work better than Yaesu to Kenwood.
Yeah, sounds a little echoey, but other than that, it's working good.
And that could be because I have the volume turned all the way down upstairs. We're having to live downstairs because it's like 98 degrees upstairs. It's hot. Too hot to live up there. So my only access to the radio is via crossband repeat. I could probably go up there and turn down the volume upstairs and the echo might go away.
Understand that. I heard you before say something about the AC problems. Yeah, I don't know. It just sounds like a little boxy, but you're perfectly copyable. I was going to jump in and tell you, I caught the tail end of that conversation about the voting, and it kind of reminded me of like the situation you were talking about with diversity receivers, you know, on goggles or whatever, or even the RC receiver. Yeah, pretty interesting stuff.
Part of it, not that, but you're absolutely right. With radio-controlled airplanes and goggles, we're using diversity receive on a pair of antennas with the repeater setup like they have in Jacksonville and like the one we're our prototype and the one they have up there near the Virginia line that Simon was talking about. It's diversity receivers. Diversity antennas, diversity receivers, doesn't matter where you put it in the loop, it's going to effectively do the same thing.
I heard them talking about it the other night. I guess it was Simon. I didn't catch who it was. I come in on the tail end of it, too. And, you know, the scattered transmitters on the same frequency, it'd be hard to coordinate. But then when I heard you talking about the receiver scattered everywhere, that would be the easy part. Over
in Jacksonville, it's just a receiver. It's receiving what you're saying, so it's retransmitting so other people can hear it. And then when you're hearing it, I guess, I don't know if it's got a small transmitter there in the shadow or not, because, you know, it's got to be bidirectional, and it's got to be, you got to hear as bad as you need to be able to talk, right? So I guess that those remote receivers are also transmitters.
Yeah, I guess you're still back to the same problem of, you know, coordinating that frequency over however far of a span you need to go. Yeah, I hadn't considered that, but yeah, you're right. You're going to have a transmitter out at the remote location also.
To have something, and I tend to talk too fast after I key up. When I'm crossband repeat, you got to be disciplined enough to key and wait a second or two and then talk, so that everything can link up. But I'll try to remember that better because I've probably been chopping off my first words. But I think it's a good setup. I think it's valuable to some degree. I'm thinking about how wide the area you make that over how many different frequencies. I know it was working good for Jacksonville for a single frequency for the whole city of Jacksonville and the outskirts. You actually were able to get on the repeater before you got into. Now, they didn't have a footprint near as big as ours because they weren't 3,000 feet up on a mountain, but they did have a kilowatt. So I noticed that when I got about 60 miles away from Jacksonville is when it started to fade, the receiver that I happened to be on as I was going north or as I was going down toward Fort Myers going south or southwest. I noticed that it kind of gave it up about 60 miles out.
I've been up in this area since I got into ham radio, and I have often wondered about, you know, I go to Savannah a lot, and you have no altitude around that area. It was kind of funny when I was living there as a teenager, actually, and on up in my early 20s, there was a intersection there that had a house on it. He had like a pile of sand in the corner of his yard. I don't know what it was about, but it was there for years, and he had a sign on top of it, highest point of sand.
That's a pretty good joke. I mean, that's some flat land there, isn't it? That's like living out on the Mojave or the Salt Flats in Arizona. It doesn't take much to make the highest peak.
The ones around there are, you know, they do have the TV towers are pretty high. There are a couple of repeaters around that has some altitude, but it ain't from a mountain over to.
Do on those flatlands, like with radio controlled airplanes, flatland is better than mountains because you can see it for a longer distance. So like around here, I mean, there's so many hills and mountains and trees and shrubs and buildings and stuff like that, you can't fly that very far away from it before something is going to get in the visual line of sight, you know, get in the way of visual line of sight. Whereas like up where Steve lives up in South Dakota, it's flat for miles on end. Before I got into radio control flying, I was doing free flight. And free flight, you just put gas in it, you launch it, you follow it wherever it decides to go, wherever the wind takes it. And up there, I lived up north when I was doing that, and that was a whole lot easier than when you got down here. You got down here, you're going up and down hills and in and out valleys and around corners, and you just can't, it's just not the same animal. W4DJW.
I know you said you've watched Painless 360 before. I envy his place he goes to fly all the time because he's just got all that open area out there. It just looks like it's miles and miles to play around in.
His videos, and there's also a guy that does a peanut farmer, I think, down in Georgia, and he's got a lot of flat land down there. You know, after you get out of the Appalachian Mountains, right? Because we're right here at the foothills, and it's kind of, after you start getting down in that area, it starts flattening out some. And he's down there close to the water, and he's got a whole bunch of peanut farming land, and that's a whole bunch of flat area that he flies over. He does, I have to look it up and send you the link to his page, but he does some really good videos too. And he goes out over land for quite a while, and it's his land, and his peanut farm. And then he'll continue out over a lake. And it's just as flat as it can be. There's people that got a whole lot better flying conditions than we do. But a challenge is what makes you work harder so you do better. So there's good and bad to both of them.
I'm familiar with him. I'll have to see if I can stumble on him. I'm kind of familiar with that area. We've got a family farm outside of Idalia. It's a little hilly around there, but, you know, we're talking a couple of hundred feet is about it. And as you get a little further south, it gets less and less so.
DJW, well, I came across a video earlier today that somebody, there's a company out there, CENSYS, Census, and they have passed their AMA requirement to be able to fly out beyond visual line of sight, BVLOS, BVLOS, and they can help people learn how to do that. So I figured eventually the way the FAA has responded to the Academy of Model Aeronautics and all of, you know, the millions of remote control or unmanned aerial system pilots out there, that I figured somebody would get a waiver on that, and there's already waivers. And I was talking to Jim, he's down in Atlanta right now, Jim Crispy, KO4LAO, a little earlier on, he gave me a phone call a little earlier, and he heard that there's some police departments that have applied for that waiver and received it as well. So it's no longer visual line of sight rules only. There's a path to being able to get beyond visual line of sight now.
4CHY. Yeah, and I'm really good at catching in the conversations because I heard a little bit about that, but I couldn't find any FAA rulings or anything. So you said that was CEN Charlie Echo November SYS.
and make sure that I got that right. And because I sent the link to Steve and I sent it to Jim, so I'll go find that link and send that to you. They've got a little menu on Ellipse in the upper right corner. You can click on it and go down to apply for FAA exemption for VLOS. So I'll send you their homepage, and then you can navigate on their menu and find that. They describe it in detail how they did it. You've got to have like redundant systems. Some of your systems have to be redundant, and you also have to have obstacle avoidance set up. And there's a little bit more to it than that. That's why they help people to understand how to apply for it and to get it, which that'll be the thing. That's the ticket. That's what I was hoping would happen. I was thinking we might have to be the ones to get the FAA to do that, but we're not. It's moving faster than we are.
Sounds encouraging, and, us little guys can't put the resources into it that somebody like that can. Just whenever you get a chance, shoot it over to me. I'd be interested in looking at that. That's why I do a lot of my flying in my backyard, so I don't have any authorities to have to come snooping around to see if I'm going VVLOS or not.
Had a meeting with him and some of the people he works with, and a guy over in Texas and another guy up in North Dakota. And I was telling Jim, we may have to get a little bit uncomfortable, get out of our comfort zone when it comes to flying with, doing some prototyping equipment and flying like that. And Jim said, I'm an FAA, FAA instructor. Yeah, that's what it is, FAA approved instructor. So he's not going to be getting uncomfortable with any of the FAA rules.
It's nice to have guys like that on the personal side of things, too. That's awesome. So I take it these waivers, you'd still have to have Part 107?
Seven is so that you can get paid. All the FAA has to do is interpret what you're doing as a path to getting paid for what you're doing, and then the Part 107 becomes a requirement. If it's just a hobby, you don't have to have Part 107. And for us, it's just a hobby, but you still can't fly beyond that visual line of sight without a waiver. So I'm thinking, unless you're making money doing that, you can do it as a hobby and apply for your Part 107. Don't apply for your Part 107. Do it just as a hobby and still apply for your waiver. They should be able to give that waiver to somebody that's making money doing it or somebody that's not making money doing it. But that's just me. I could be wrong. W4DJW.
That's why I was kind of approaching that too, because, it does seem like it should be across the board. I'm not planning on making any money. I've considered getting Part 107 before, but, it's just, that'd be money spending on that I could spend on something else, like, an open spot 4 that I just got or something of that effect. So I've never done it. It'd be interesting to be able to just file for a waiver and, I guess probably with the 107, you would have to lay out everything. This is what I'm planning on doing. This is the systems that are in place and things of that nature. But it'd be nice to have the option, that's for sure. K4CHY, back to you.
It's nice to have, but it's also if you want to do any prototyping of any equipment that can be used for. So one of the things that I've learned by talking with Jim and these other people that do search and rescue, SAR is what they call it, or search and recovery, either one. I've never done either. But, what they're saying is oftentimes when people get really desperate, like with the Brian Laundries and what's her name, something petite, they came to them last and out of desperation instead of first. So you don't have much time to find somebody when somebody's missing like that. And you want to maximize your time that you spend hunting for something like that. But if you can't go beyond line of sight, you're limited at what you can prototype. But if you can go beyond line of sight, you're unlimited to what you can prototype.
When you mention law enforcement, I figure they'll probably give them, you know, blanket waivers and first responder search and rescue type operations. I guess still has the possibility of leaving us out, but at least it would give us a path to, you know, like you were saying, this company outlined, this is what you got to do. So you, if you was wanting to get the waiver battened up, I guess it would be possible.
Other things that are taken care of, Steve and I are going to work on a way to do that using a repeater in the sky. Put a repeater up that does not cross-band repeat, but repeats. You know, we need at least three separate frequencies, two of them. You have to have an FCC ham radio license to be able to use. The other one you don't. The 2.4 gigahertz you don't, but the 900 megahertz and the 433 megahertz you do. And those are used for telemetry and something else anyway. You get video and telemetry or something like that. So you want to be able to go up to the repeater in the sky that's sitting up there at 400 feet and then go down to an aircraft that is moving 3 miles out, right? Without having to be up, without having to respect the one-tenth rule for every, because then you get so high. One-tenth rule is for every mile you go out, you go up a tenth of a mile, another mile out, another up, another tenth of a mile. And by the time you get out very far at all, you're so high you can't see what's on the ground anymore. It all just blends together.
Really interesting. You could have like one kind of mothership and kind of relaying between all the different controls and aircraft. Very interesting. I'd like to get updates on how y'all do on that stuff. Could you use something like, they're video transmitters, but they're just transmitting on a frequency. I wonder if you could pipe data into that. But that is higher frequency, so they probably wouldn't have the reach that the like 433 and 900 would have.
The 5.8 gigahertz and the 2.4 gigahertz video, but there's also lower 1.3 gigahertz, which will go further, but it's not as clear in the goggles. So it all depends on what you're doing. Those guys that do the racing of the mini quads, they're using the 5.8, and they've got really good clarity, but they're not going around the block. They're just staying right there on their same block. They're not really going anywhere. They're racing around a course that's right there where they're at. For us, we'd be going out further, so we'd probably drop down in frequency so we could go out further, but also go up and out. Don't just go out, right, so that you can get the same thing we're doing right now using the repeater, right? So you're way down in Seneca, I'm up here, and I'm using a half a watt on a handheld, and you're probably not a whole lot more than that. Same concept, the exact same concept, except you just put the airplane up there in the sky. There are people that don't live under the FAA governance, like in other countries, that are doing that, and they're doing it with a single transmitter. So they have three aircraft out there. They flip the switch for aircraft one, they lift it up, they put it in loiter, then they flip the switch there, and it just sits there in loiter. Then they flip the aircraft two, they'll take the next one off, and they'll go out at a distance and then launch it into auto, and it starts flying its course. And then they'll flip it to aircraft three, and they'll pick that one up, and they'll do, observe the two from a higher altitude and be a visual observer of the other two so that, they can film it so you can see what's going on. And doing it all with a single transmitter. So it's pretty cool. The technology is just unlimited. W4DJW.
I use mostly the 5.8 for video, and I guess that's more because I'm not doing long range, and you don't want 2.4 because that's what your control system is, I guess. I've seen the 1.2 stuff, but I've not delved into it because, like I said, I'm usually just flying around these parts, so not going out a long way. but yet very interesting stuff. And I've seen a video, it's been years ago, and always wondered why somebody didn't develop it further, or maybe they have, and we just don't have access to it. But it was kind of like INAV, but rather than just, you know, putting in waypoints for it to follow, it could actually do image processing and do obstacle avoidance. The guy put it together and had a video of it flying through a field and, like, you know, coming up on a tree and doing a bank turn to avoid the tree and leveling back out and getting back on course. And it was really cool, and I really expected that to take off a lot more than it did.
I think in other countries it has taken off a lot more than it has here because they didn't have that crackdown. Before the crackdown with the FAA, one of the things I was doing with the guy that was here from Germany is 5.8 gigahertz from your goggles up to the mothership, 2.4 gigahertz video out to the aircraft. So you have a, I forget the name of them, EZUHF, the company that did that, that one. They also had a repeater box that you could put in an airplane, and you could do 5.8 gigahertz to it, and it would do 2.4 gigahertz out to the other airplane, and that's all video. And then you use 70 centimeters for command from your EZUHF to command the aircraft, and it went up and it went out as well. It had a repeater. And then 900 megahertz, that was for telemetry, 900 megahertz for control, which the Free Sky radios use 900 megahertz now. The Tandem radio does any of a couple of different frequencies, and you can put the modules in there you want yourself. 2.4, 900, and 70 centimeters, you can blend it to whatever you want to use. So the capability is there for us to use, even here in the United States.
The open LRS stuff, yeah, and I remember reading about EZUHF. Like I said, just never have had the call to do it, but and I would guess Crossfire is doing something similar to that too, TBS Crossfire, but I'm not sure how they work as far as frequencies go. But is that like the open LRS stuff?
That is what that is, and I remember the name now. It's Immersion RC is the one that made EZUHF, and Team Black Sheep. That's that guy that got in trouble with the FAA up in New York City for flying over New York City. Snappy or something like that was his name. I can't remember his name. Happy, Snappy. And some Trappy. That was it. His name was Trappy. And he's a UK. He's a guy from the UK that flew over New York City, and the FAA fined him thousands of dollars. So he's kind of popular because of that. But he has that Crossfire system, that Team Black Sheep Crossfire. I had that at one time. I liked the Immersion RC a whole lot better than his solution. Immersion RC was much more professional, much more, a better quality. It went further, but I also read other guys that are wanting, like the latest on goggles, and they're talking about using Crossfire. I guess he got his act together. And I guess he's doing a lot better now than he was when he first got his notoriety for flying over New York City. So, and I hear they're liking it now a whole lot better than when it was brand new.
He has actually done a lot as far as development and stuff. He's got some non-Crossfire receivers that are actually transmitters too, video transmitters too, that are really small and still full power. So yeah, he has done a lot of good stuff over the years. Not sure about the time frame of when he got in trouble, but I don't know if that's been in the middle of it. It seems like I remember that being kind of in the middle of all of his stuff, but yeah, he's definitely pushed the hobby. And I believe it and Immersion, aren't they related to one of the companies in the Patchwork?
Well, Clint Sharp and Emergence RC are related, but I think Emergence RC is out of Raleigh, North Carolina. And I'm not sure where Fat Shark is, but I knew Immersion RC, there was danger of them going under, but I think they came back from it. I think they were saying this is the last of this equipment. You know, they had a going out of business sale, but then the next thing you know, there they are back as strong as ever. So maybe somebody bought them out and they've got the name. But I'm still buying Immersion RC equipment, so I guess whatever happened there, they came back from the dead.
That I know, yeah, I think they were about the first ones to do the diversity receivers. They made a name for themselves with that. So, but yeah, Trappy's done a lot of stuff too. I've been really surprised. And there's, I think both of them have, and I can't recall the name of it now, but it's, they've kind of furthered the crossfire thing, and I think it's long range stuff too. And I can't remember the name of it.
One of the things I'd like to do, I mean, there's a lot of applications. There's unlimited applications. The search and rescue's nice. They're just flying out and having fun and taking videos of it and putting them on the internet. That's kind of fun, but there's so many people doing that now that that's kind of lost its appeal. One of the things I'd like to do is take this TDOA, time difference of arrival on a signal, down to 250 billionths of a second, and use that for plotting and use that for real-time flying, right? So you get three aircraft out there, and they're all flying, and they're all three doing TDOA, time difference of time, down to 250 billionths of a second, and they're drawing maps of intersecting circles. And as soon as the signal comes out, you can just fly to the location of where that signal is and just sit there and loiter and follow it wherever it goes. I think that would be a pretty cool application of that technology.
That, a lot of this stuff is kind of, blended in with RC and ham radio. That's actually why I got my ham license, because of the video transmitters. But yeah, I've not done a lot of the RC stuff here lately, so I've been kind of out of touch with it. But yeah, the long range stuff always interested me. I used to watch those guys out in Moab flying those planes along the ridges out there for just what seemed miles and miles and miles, and that's just that's a very cool flying right there. Of course, they were really accomplished editors, too, to put it all together. But, yeah, and I tend to get bored with stuff like that after a while. You know, you can only cover your area so many times, and you know what everything is. So, yeah, it's nice to be able to venture out on YouTube and get others' perspectives, too.
For LSL.
KG4 LSL. Well, one of the things, Keith, that I like, that when it comes to doing that long range stuff, is those guys that fly out in the mountains. So you know how long it takes to hike from the bottom of a snow-covered mountain to the top. I like to watch those guys with those really fast racers that go from the bottom of a mountain that's like, I don't know, a 5-mile peak, all the way up to the top of the mountain in about 3 minutes. And you can see everything in between. And then they'll turn around and come right back down the mountain. They're doing over 100 miles an hour, because scaling a mountain in minutes from top to bottom. And and it's close up, too. They're like right on the mountain. They're only, you know, less than 50 feet above the ground. That's pretty cool. That's still pretty cool, even after watching the hundreds of videos doing that stuff. The other station, go ahead. This is W4DJW with KM4CHY.
Yeah, good evening, gentlemen. KG4LSL. Name here is Jimmy. Juliet, India, Mike, Yankee. Just moved here to Anderson and just got my antennas up and hooked the coax up. Just wanted to see if I could get a signal report into the repeater and make sure I'm being heard.
I got it. Of course, South Carolina, and sitting downstairs on a handheld, but it sounds like you're sitting in the room with me down here. I'm crossbanding to my station upstairs, my shack upstairs, and out to the repeater. But it sounds like you're sitting right here with me. I mean, it's just as crisp and clear and really, really good signal over here. We'll get a report from Keith over in Seneca. Keith, go ahead.
There was another station earlier, I think it was KG4PFI, just come booming in here, and the LSL station is the same way. It's like you're sitting here next to me. I'm not cross-banding or anything, so I'm just doing radio to the repeater.
That is what I was hoping to hear. I just put a 2-meter 440 copper J-pole on top of a 40-foot telescopic mast, and I'm actually working on my coax for my HF rig now, and really excited to get on the air. From what I have heard, you know, just listening in on, I had the copper J-pole about 5 feet up in the front yard, just kind of scanning around and listening. It's good to see that there's a good VHF presence of ham radio operators here in the upstate of South Carolina. From Atlanta, where I moved to, it was kind of dead. So really excited to be in here.
And the density of amateur radio operators in this area for both VHF and HF and UHF as well. I hear there's a lot of that too. I don't get on that very much, but I hear there's quite a bit of that too. I think the density is pretty high in this area. When I look at APRS, Atlanta, Chattanooga, Raleigh, Charlotte, Columbia, and Greenville, South Carolina, Greenville definitely has more APRS traffic than any of the other cities. And those cities are a lot bigger than Greenville. So, yeah, we've got a good representation of amateur radio in this area. I think you'll like it. Welcome to this area. W4DJW.
Definitely welcome to the upstate. I moved up here 25, 30 years ago and have never looked back. Just love it up in this area. Yeah, and I was going to say, I'm not hearing, maybe Dave can come back too, I'm not hearing any white noise, no crackling or nothing. It's just booming in. Sounds really good.
Love to hear. All right, gentlemen. Well, I will let you guys get back with your QSO that you were having. I've got to solder up this other 259 and then start hooking up the old Yaesu 450D and hooking it up to the computer and everything else. So I will say 73. I do appreciate you coming back to me, and I'll be on the side listening. KG4LSL.
I'm going to have to bug out, too. Amy's getting ready to call me. She said she's leaving work in just a minute or two. So she usually likes to talk when it's late and she leaves and when she's getting out of the car. So before she rings me while we're talking, I'm going to give you a heads up that I'm going to be out of here as well. I enjoyed the queue, so talk to you later, W4DJW.
Good to catch you.
Haven't
talked to you in a while. We're about due supper time here ourselves, so good timing on that. W4DJW, KN4CHY, be clear and listen.
KO4RIM.
K4RIM, go ahead.
Good. Reach you on Simplex 1 real quick.
Over, K4RIM.
4RIM clear.